So I'd like to introduce Dr. Andy Peitzman from University of Pittsburgh. What is a difficult gallbladder? He's been working on this subject for, I've seen many, many years, and it's always a pleasure, and there's always something new to learn. So thanks, Andy.
Thanks so much, David and Abe. It's an honor to be here and talk with you today. The goals of my talk today will identify factors that are predictive of the difficult cholecystectomy. We'll discuss strategies to minimize the risk of bile duct or vascular injury, and then define the difficult cholecystectomy. And there are really two variants of that. One is the situation in which the disease makes the operation difficult. And the second is when we make the operation difficult because we get in trouble. And I'll give some discussion about how to avoid that. This is a patient I had a few years ago. So will this be a difficult cholecystectomy? He's 82 years old. He's a malpractice attorney. I've operated on his wife twice for adhesive disease, and I've gotten to know the family over 10 years. His daughter is my medical student, and in the history, he tells me he has had right upper quadrant pain for 35 years. And his ultrasound shows a small, shrunken gallbladder. If we look at factors that we know predict the difficult cholecystectomy and see what boxes we check in this case, he's over 80, he's a male, he's had symptoms for a long time. He probably has had repeated bouts of cholecystitis. He is obese. And then the imaging factors that we all know, impacted stone, gallbladder wall thickness, paracholecystic fluid, the contracted gallbladder or emphysema, he has a shrunken gallbladder. This is a nice paper from Lippmann that enables us to quantify that, and he had at least, if not five, if not six of the risk factors. Needless to say, we did have to open, went fine, but I knew ahead of time this was going to be a difficult cholecystectomy. So there are a couple key concepts as we get into the discussion. First, conversion from laparoscopic to open cholecystectomy is not failure. Second, calling for help is a sign of strength, and call before you get in trouble, when you're not sure what you're looking at, when you're struggling. And lastly, bile duct injury is never an acceptable outcome from this operation. On the other hand, conversion to open cholecystectomy does not eliminate the dangers. And even though the risk of bile duct injury is a little bit lower than when we first began doing laparoscopic cholecystectomies, the injuries we see now, the most severe injuries, are actually when we convert from laparoscopic to open, and usually when we're doing a top-down cholecystectomy. So again, conversion does not get us out of trouble and may get us into trouble. So why do bile duct injuries still occur? Bile duct injury occurs far more often because of misinterpretation of normal anatomy as opposed to anatomic variation. We misinterpret normal anatomy. And then what should have been a routine cholecystectomy becomes difficult because we get in trouble. Other factors which make this operation difficult in bile duct injuries to occur: inflammation, chronic scarring, which to me is as treacherous, if not more, than acute inflammation. We'll talk about some anatomic variations. And then, as was mentioned earlier, misperception, where we see what we believe and don't believe what we're looking at on the screen. And then Strasburg has talked about error traps in this operation, and there are four that he described. An error trap: you do the operation the way you always have, because it works almost always. And you don't recognize that the situation that you're in now, your technique is not going to work. This is an error trap, and these four will result in biliary injury if you don't recognize where you are. The first is the infundibular view, where there's scarring and the common hepatic duct is stuck to the back of the gallbladder. You think you're looking at the cystic duct, and you're actually looking at common bile duct. Error trap number one. Number two, and this is what happens when we convert to open cholecystectomy, this is what we see in, with a nice robin's egg blue gallbladder come down the liver side of the gallbladder, come down to the cystic triangle. Everything is as it should be, With acute inflammation, again, usually we're open at this point. We are coming down this plane thinking that we're in the normal, usual plane, and we're not, and we take the bile duct and usually rate hepatic artery. So you can see how we get in trouble because of this fusion and seeing what we think should be there and not what we're actually looking at. Third, and this is either open or on cholangiography, not acknowledging an aberrant right duct. And if you do this operation infundibulum first, which is not how I think we should be doing it, we'll talk about it, it will be unavoidable to injure this duct because you've already taken cystic duct down here before you realize that there's an abnormality that you needed to deal with. If you do this operation top-down or semi-top-down and see the anomaly, then you can fire a stapler, save that little remnant, and it becomes a routine cholecystectomy. There can be a parallel union cystic duct or a fused cystic and common duct, so those are the four air traps that we need to look for and avoid as we do the operation. There are some key concepts as we do this operation. Orient to normal anatomy. Falciform ligament, duodenum, common bile duct, Ruvier's sulcus. Exposure is critical, and the safest plane for this operation, open or laparoscopic, is in the wall of the gallbladder. And you want to limit your dissection to the subserosa, and as soon as you drift out of serosa, you're much more likely to get into trouble doing the operation. This is a nice paper by Hunter that talks about exposure. So usually we're the attending help and the resident on the patient's right side. The first grasper retracts the dome toward the patient's right shoulder, and that opens up the redundancy in the infundibulum and will show a cystic duct. And then the other grasper will retract laterally, which straightens out the cystic duct and again defines the anatomy. So what we do as first assistant is critically important. We obtain a critical view of safety and all three components, as was already mentioned. There should be liberal use of intraoperative imaging, and then it is vitally important to recognize when you need to change your operative plan, to know what the bailout techniques are, and importantly, know where not to be as you're doing the operation. Ruvier's sulcus is an important anatomic landmark that not everybody knows. It's present in 80% of cases. And in about 80% of those cases, the portal triad to the posterior right lobe is within that sulcus. We do not want to dissect posterior to that line because that's where the portal structures will sit. So we always want to be anterior to this line. And again, it's a good landmark to find and can reorient you if you're struggling with the operation. We have to identify anatomy, and then how we dissect, how we do the operation are really two different but related techniques. The common dissection techniques are the infundibulum first, which is how I learned, and I think there are many circumstances where that won't be the right operation and it gets us in trouble. We'll talk about that for a minute. The top-down cholecystectomy and then what we call semi-top-down, and I'll show you some pictures in a minute. And then after we've done our dissection, how are we identifying the anatomy? The critical view of safety is obviously essential. Liberal use of intraoperative imaging with either cholangiography or ultrasound. So I think everybody would agree with this statement that what is safest and best for an open procedure is safest and best for a laparoscopic procedure. And when we do the infundibulum first cholecystectomy, we violate that principle. And it's predictable that it will get us in trouble under certain circumstances. So what if we begin our dissection here with the infundibulum and we decide to go through here and loop this and take this? We've divided the common bile duct. Now, again, that occurred because we, again, used a technique which is fraught to get us into trouble. And also, we did not recognize one of the landmarks, which is the epicholodocal plexus, which sits on the common bile duct, and you see this cartoon looks very much like what we see in this image. Semi-top-down technique is what we prefer, so the dissection would be high on the infundibulum, and then we work toward the dome, but preserve enough of the dome attachment to the liver that it's easy to retract. So begin the dissection here, and then come up, and what I'm showing here is dome here, is infundibulum is here, and the gallbladder is perpendicular to the resident as he takes the gallbladder off the liver, come across infundibulum and come up the medial wall, staying right on the gallbladder. And as commonly occurs, the cystic duct and cystic artery widely separate as we do that. You see that we've stayed toward the gallbladder when we cross cystic duct node. And now you can see wide exposure. Again, dome is still attached, but now and only now do we come down and do the money part of the operation. And we essentially have a critical view of safety on steroids. So let's talk about the top down for a minute. The advantage is you go from known to unknown, but the challenges are, and this is where people get into bad trouble, you must recognize when you're approaching hazard and when you have to stop what you're doing. And again, you must know where not to be as you do this operation. So where not to be? Do not drift off the gallbladder wall. Again, at times you need to be within the gallbladder itself to safely see what you're doing. And Dr. Zuckerman will talk about that in a minute. Do not drift deep to Ruvier's sulcus. That's where the portal structures live. And again, Dr. Strasberg has talked about injury to the portal vein. And again, as you get into Ruvier's sulcus, you will find that branch and it will bleed. Do not drift into the cystic plate. That's where the middle hepatic vein lives. So again, with the difficult gallbladders, you can get lost and that will cause, again, what may be lethal hemorrhage. And do not persist in attempting to gain a critical view of safety when there's severe scarring and inflammation, and it essentially is contraindicated in that circumstance. I want to show you, hopefully, a video of a dome-down cholecystectomy, and I thank Dr. Chand and his colleagues at Loyola for allowing us to use this.
Trocars are positioned as demonstrated here. The gallbladder is large and distended with difficult exposure of the triangle of Collot secondary to poor retraction. Once initial trocars are placed, we elect to decompress the gallbladder. This is done laparoscopically. Once decompression takes place,
so again, we want to decompress it enough, but not so much that it loses all substance. It's easier if you leave a little bit. And now we're coming down and see that this will be a difficult dissection as we come toward the infundibulum. And the decision is made to do this dome down. Now, one trick that I think is important is to leave at least a centimeter of peritoneum on the liver so you can grasp that and use it to retract the liver. If you don't do that, then the liver really ends up getting in the way and makes the operation much more difficult. So leaving that little rim of peritoneum, I think, is very helpful as we proceed with this operation. Coming down and again taking the gallbladder off the liver side, making sure we don't drift into the cystic plate. The middle hepatic vein is within millimeters of this fossa, and in 20% of cases, there will be branches of middle hepatic vein within the fossa itself. So again, it's essential not to drift into that plate. The liver, again, keeps getting in the way, and that can be an issue. I would not hesitate to put a liver retractor in so you can, again, optimize your exposure as you do the top-down cholecystectomy. And again, you see the anatomy as you come to it. There is good visualization. You can see that. Save it. Continue your dissection. And now we start to see the infundibulum, identify Collot's triangle, cystic duct, cystic artery. And again, a liver retractor would make this a lot easier. But we see the anatomy, we see cystic duct node, stay to the gallbladder side of that as we do our dissection. Take the duct, take the artery. So we're doing a cholecystectomy, we put our scope in and we see this. What do? We stop and talk to the folks in the room and say, what are we going to do? How will we approach this? This is a major change in our operative strategy, right? We have to do things differently. So the intraoperative decisions are to recognize when it won't be safe to do the cholecystectomy, and what you want to do is a cholecystostomy. You have to recognize, and this is a quote directly from the SAGE's Safe Cholecystectomy Guidelines, recognize when a dissection is approaching a zone of great danger and halt the dissection before you enter it. Again, know where not to be. With severe inflammation in the porta hepatis and the neck of the gallbladder, the critical view of safety can be difficult to achieve, and it alerts us to danger, and persistence and insistence in trying to find a critical view of safety in this setting will produce a bile duct and vascular injury. So you have to know when to stop and come up with another option. And in this setting, we finish the operation by a safe method other than cholecystectomy, and these are the bailout techniques, which are cholecystostomy or a partial cholecystectomy, and Dr. Zuckerman is going to talk about that next. Thank you very much.